Hello, friends, and welcome to Backstory. I'm your host, Alex Roberts. Friends, I'm sorry about my audio quality today. I'm on the road and not at my usual equipment. I'm going to be doing a lot more traveling this month. At the end of July, I will be at Ropecon in Helsinki, Finland. As I've mentioned, I'm going to be their guest of honor. I'm over the moon about it, and I'm going to take a little bit of time in Europe afterwards, so Backstory will be on vacation for the month of August. I'll be back in September with some very exciting guests. Speaking of exciting guests, this episode, I'll be speaking with DC, famed streamer, RPG theorist, master of the Twitter thread, and game designer. His Forged in the Dark game, Mutants in the Night, is out in its first official version, so I thought it would be a good time to have him on. But really, I've been wanting to speak with him forever. As it happens, he's about to be starting up a podcast of his own, on the One Shot Network. So everything just kind of works out sometimes, don't you think? Out. Are you still playing with it? Are you still refining it? Have you set it down for like a little bit?
I've set it down in a way. At the moment, I'm playtesting it a lot, but I'm not taking any of the information that I'm getting and actually editing it yet. I'm just making notes and like preparing for the time, because I worked on that game like nonstop for 5 months. And right now, even though I absolutely love it, it's my favorite game. I think that's like my biggest feeling about it. I need a little bit of a break from sitting at my computer tweaking it and thinking about all the possibilities. So I'm playtesting with my patrons and my Discord community, which has been so much fun, partially because I'm getting to know a lot of people who either follow me on Twitter or hang out in my Discord. Some people don't talk as much as others, which is like completely fine. But there are all of these people who support me in one way or another who I don't really know. And getting to sit down on like Roll20 and actually play this game that they've been excited about for however long. I don't know how long people have been following along with the process. Playing with them and being like, okay, this is what you've been waiting for, and now I get to do this for you, is an amazing experience, really. It like really humbles me.
It sounds really energizing, right? It makes you want to keep working on something like that.
Yeah, it really does. And it's also very reaffirming when people like create their characters and they create a world and they get really excited and into it and they start using their powers together and like building relationships with NPCs, like seeing all of that happen makes me feel like I did the right thing as a designer.
Right. You know, you've talked on Twitter about the intensity of how you've worked on Mutants in the Night, that it's been this kind of like 5 months is a lot of time to be constantly working on something, but it's actually a pretty quick development cycle for like a first draft of something. Is this something that just kind of possessed you all of a sudden, or like was this an inspiring thought, or is this something that you've wanted to do for a long time and we're now like, screw it, I'm doing it?
It was a straight up possession. I don't know if it was like an angel and a demon, one on each shoulder kind of thing, being like, well, we must do this, and arguing about it. That was probably it, now that I think about it. But when I thought about what I wanted to do as a designer, like I always have the overarching thought, and I start with the galaxy brain and try and move down into my own brain. The first thing that happened is, and I think I've mentioned this to you before, is I listened to Daniel Kwan's interview here on Backstory, and Avery, who became my mentor kind of out of nowhere, but it was like one of the most important things to happen to me probably in my life. She said, listen to this interview. And she has this way of, although oddly don't know each other as much as we know each other, we don't talk like a ton. She just happens to like really pick up on on like who I am as a person and what I need, which is terrifyingly mystical. She said, listen to this interview. And so I listened to it. And the thing that Daniel Kwan really got into that completely changed my concept of tabletop RPGs as a whole was about how colonialism and culture really affect the games that we make and how we play games. I wanted to make a game that was more representative of the Black experience, like American, African American experience, and without getting into the common issues of like wearing a skin suit. And that was something that was like, oh, that's impossible. I don't know. I don't think I could do that. And as I thought forward, I was like, okay, that's a good start. But then there has to be like some intersectionality there. Like there's all of these other marginalized identities, and how am I going to make it comfortable for people to experience both like poverty and systematic oppression and be able to fit themselves inside, or if they don't experience those things, to be put in that position without going, oh, well, I'm this person for 4 hours and I'm not going to learn anything. So one day, and this was after maybe 3 weeks of just thinking, I probably have new wrinkles on my face because I was just thinking for weeks. It was intense. I was walking down the stairs from my apartment and I asked myself just the same question. I was like, okay, so how do I like make this identity without messing everything up? And like another voice of me came in and was like, mutants did it. And I was like, oh yeah, mutants did it. And I was like, wait, I can do mutants. That's a thing that I can do. And I just, in that moment, like everything erupted because I was like formulating these pieces of what was going to be mutants in the night. And then once I had that element, my brain was just like, okay, everything's in place. Now we're just going to start running this machine and you're going to sit there and pump out everything that the machine pumps out. And it was honestly beautiful. It was an amazing experience for me because I wrote just everything that I've wanted to say about the world and my personal condition and the condition of the people I love and all the people that I've met and spent time with, like on the internet or otherwise, to give them a place where things are the same in one way, in that you have to directly face the condition that has been placed upon you, I suppose. The main issue I see in society with like all of my friends and all the people, you hear the stories, you see them on Twitter or on the news, that people just feel powerless, and that hurts a lot. So I just gave people power. Mechanically, like they just work. There's nothing standing in your way from using your ability. How you use it is a whole other bag. Here's a world where things do suck just the way that they do here, and maybe even worse. But when you want to be that person who succeeds in something, you 100% will be. How you use that new responsibility is something that you get to investigate, but you will always have that moment of freedom where like you achieve what you want to do. That was the whole goal of the game.
And do you see that coming through when your playtesters play it?
Yes, and it is the most fulfilling thing. Everything else is refining and tweaking, and I can see where things need to be like clarified. I see the more that I'm working on this game and talking with like playtesters and other designers, as I feel like designing is like trying to have a conversation with someone, and a lot of it is trying to clarify like your points and like brush up how your sentence is like presented, things like that. But the actual core of it, when people are like, hey, you know, even though I rolled horribly a bunch of times, when it came time for me to use my super strength and describe what it looked like and what it felt like and what I could do with it, that felt amazing. And that's the feeling I want people to carry on.
You describe, even in the text, this feeling of empowerment, of what can happen when you are empowered. What kinds of stories do people tell in your playtests so far? I mean, Blades in the Dark, which Mutants in the Night is based on the same system. You have a lot of flexibility there, and you can do heists, or you can do stuff that is more I don't know, maybe like a character driven or community driven. What's the range that you've seen so far of stories with mutants in the night?
So far, it's actually been probably a little bit more focused towards being like a freedom fighter. I think the general appeal after you read all the story is like, yeah, I could totally do that. It also kind of funnels into like the X-Men sort of vibe that people are just going to have regardless of what goes on in the text. People are going to be like, this is X-Men. I'm like, all right, just do what you're going to do. I've had some really interesting playtests where people have decided to like be artists. Well, there was one group that decided to be like circus performers and that they would use their powers in very tricky ways. Like one the person who was the world breaker, who had super strength, would be juggling bowling balls. But then when someone wants to see one, they'd have like a foam bowling ball and hand it to them. Use all of the tricks of the circus to mask their abilities, I thought was really interesting. As a group, there are always a couple of options available, but I think that individually, players end up picking things that align more with whatever their vice happens to be. There have been artists that the Prestige, which is a class about illusions, making illusions about yourself, and as you become more powerful, illusions about the world. There was someone who was like, hey, is it cool if I'm like the street artist that uses my illusions to first kind of draw people into the street art, but then it like kind of turns into political art, and that it changes, like it kind of has this message to make people feel better about mutant kind. That hit me emotionally. I was like, oh, this is these things that I don't think about at all, because even though like I've run the numbers a thousand times in my head, people surprise me every single time. And seeing things like that and seeing that people think about those options and how their presence and their actions influence the community and the presentation of mutants to the society and their games. Individually, I see a lot of variance there.
I really want to talk to you about the vices, actually. So in Blades in the Dark, from what I understand, you have ways of blowing off steam, right? Because your stress meter is always going up and you can lower your stress by indulging in one of your vices. And the default game has vices that sort of match that setting. And you have custom vices that I think are some of the most evocative pieces in terms of describing what the setting, the tone of the setting is like. Can you tell me a little bit about coming up with what the vices would be like in this world? Did that come to you naturally, or did you really like specifically think about things that you wanted to communicate with them?
That was mostly natural. When I came in with what I wanted vices to be, in the setting of Blades, those vices make complete sense. In Mutants in the Dark, the first thing that I thought was, what do I do? What do my friends do? What does this or that culture do? It changes to a point where a vice in the scope of Blades is this darker, more negative thing. In that setting, you're a criminal, and so you're following along with that theme. In the mutant setting, you're just a person who's struggling with life. So what does a person who's struggling with life do to blow off steam? There are so many things in my life that I'm exposed to because of my friends. There are things that I do. I asked a bunch of people in my Discord, in my personal life, hey, what do? Like when you get off work and you actually have some time to go out or stay in. And that's how I got all of my answers.
Oh, that's so cool. And it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. People generally looked at all of the options and are like, yeah, that's what I do. Or I'd totally pick this because my variation of that is this. I very purposefully made it so that you can have a particular vice, but that vice doesn't lead you into a specific activity. It's just the reasoning for which you do that thing. So some people have like vibin', which is going out and like building a relationship with the person, trying to find someone who's on that same wavelength as you and just having like a good social interactive time. But that can be done in the same place that someone goes to turn up and get super drunk or high or whatever you happen to do. And that's also very important because I don't want people to feel like they're part of that world and their feelings and their perspective is disconnected from the other players. You're all in the same space, in the same city, seeing the same people. It's just your personal experience with that is going to come off in one way. So it's really trying to continue to build community and a sense of ownership and relationship with the world. So when things happen, you care about it.
Right. So even your vices have a way of connecting characters to other characters.
Right. One thing that I thought of that I personally really like is having it so that when you engage in a vice, you can bring one of your trusted NPC friends with you so that you can have small roleplay opportunities there. And in the GM's guide notes, I give the option of having that NPC be a vehicle for the community's feelings about the actions of empowered mutants after you've completed a job. If your actions end up having more of an effect on the community around you, then that NPC is going to have feelings about it. They're going to bring it up. It's going to put players in a situation where they go, okay, well, at first we were going around doing our powers thing and having a lot of fun. And yeah, we were a little bit cautious, but our actions really do matter. And we have to be even more careful about how we present ourselves and how we go about using our advantages in the world outside, because that still reflects on every mutant, not just us. And that message is something that is extremely powerful for like marginalized communities, but it's one that I don't want to immediately be conveyed in the game. So it's something that stacks up over time.
Right. So that's the kind of message that's a campaign play kind of mode, I guess, or motif or something. I'm interested in things that are particularly well suited to the medium of you meet for a couple of hours regularly. Probably one of my favorite things about the setting and the way that you describe it in the current text is that you've included information on the way that mutants engage with sports and the fashion industry, because those are things that I don't see get talked about in a lot of settings, even though like those things are huge and they influence our daily lives. I mean, especially fashion. Why were those two things important to you to include?
I actually believe that the reason I even thought about it at first was because of a tweet somebody made. And I've cultivated my Twitter to be this extremely beneficial and informative experience, which took a very long time. But
you should release a guide on how to do that, actually, like a big book, a self-help book or something.
That'll be my big break. There was some great designer or theorist or player who said in a tweet, if you don't have sports in your setting, then you're not being realistic about like the things that influence us. And when I read that tweet, I thought back to what my goal was. And I'm like, wait, there's so much that ends up influencing marginalized communities, sports and fashion, specifically the Black community. And there are things in there that I can offer up as ideas. And even if they're not acted upon, that framework is there and it changes everything. Fashion was extremely accessible. Everyone has indulged in fashion to some degree in every playtest. People love to look good. It's the prestige class power sheet, the official name, is all about being flashy. And one of the XP triggers for that power is, did you use your illusion in a way that impressed your crew? So the descriptions of what you do and how you do it are even baked into your experience. And I think that every prestige player up to this point has either been into high fashion or has picked like high fashion friends. Like you have the option of having a friend who's a drag queen, and almost every prestige player picks that person. And it's like, even if I'm not into super into fashion, I hang out with the fashionable, and that whole vibe like is super built up. And it's great because all of them have been men so far, and they lean into it really, really heavily. They're like, oh, I was a model, and like I have a very femme appearance, and either I used to be like a great model, or I'm a great model now, or I'm a drag queen or something like that. And having that outlet, like I didn't think that it would be as consistent, but throwing in stuff like fashion has been just great to see that. So many guys are like, yeah, I'm going to be like way more femme in my presentation. And not just that, I'm going to like go out there and I'm going to slay. I'm going to hang out with my drag queen friends, all of this. And they really play it into the story. Whereas in sports, a lot of the women have gone into like the underground fighting, being a world breaker, playing a female character or a woman character. They're like, I'm this 5'6", pretty skinny, no one would expect me to be super strong woman, but I am also the breaker of worlds. And like that contrast of being like, yeah, there's all of these people out there looking for underground battle sports and all these beautifully mutated people out there, and having people's conception of like gender really get blended in, and gender roles, I guess, really blended in to the game. They're like, we're going wherever we're going to go. And that's a great experience. I'm so thankful for sports and fashion, honestly.
Yeah, definitely. And I think if you're telling a story about marginalized people who have to interact with like a broader world in some way, I mean, sports and fashion are two of the ways that like, oh, your labor, like the products of what you do can be valued. And at the same time, we will be able to indicate that we did not value you. Like that's two of such excellent outlets for the dominant culture to be able to do that. Are those things that you find that you're exploring? I know it's hinted at in the text, but that's scary stuff to talk about at the table.
Not yet. It is sort of scary. The reaction to that specifically is something that I am a little hesitant to like get into, because it's so real. There's this huge thing in sports and fashion, and that really ties back into like Black culture, where it's you are on display for us. And so it's a little touchy, but I definitely want it to be there. Like I wouldn't take it out if someone paid me. It's also terrifying.
Yeah, it's like enter if you dare.
It's important, and there's going to be a point, I think, in my head canon, there's going to be a world breaker who eventually has their identity revealed, and everyone's going to be worried about the mutant task force and the police and rival mutant gangs. And then a manager's just going to walk in one day and go, hey, I can make all that go away if you work for me and come play football and I get 70%.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Oh, so many. See, a deal with the devil. I mean, that's like, that's good RPG stuff, right?
I'm so scared of that moment. It's going to be so good and it's going to be so important, but I'm also like, oh, what do I do?
I'm excited for it to get there. I'm excited for that inevitability. And I'm glad that you have such an enthusiastic base for feedback and for encouragement and just things that have to happen in playtesting. You've been doing this Patreon thing. I'm very curious about what were you expecting and how's it going for you?
Wow. Patreon has been wild. I made a Patreon initially because I thought to myself, one, it's a good way to get myself out there and to start building like a dedicated fan base, I suppose, and like try and recoup some of my time with costs. But really, I wasn't expecting too much. A lot of people have Patreons, and I could not guess, depending on the person, how big their Patreon is. I always go and I click and I'm like, that's either too small or, hey, good for you. How many patrons do I have? I think I have like 60 or 70 right now.
It's 65. I checked today.
Oh, thank you. I have 65 patrons. I really don't keep up with my Patreon, but that's mostly because I connected my Patreon to my Discord server.
Okay. Tell me about that.
That was a magical thing that just fell upon me. My Discord server has maybe 150 people in it now, and the majority of them are either designers or players that I've met through Twitter. And a few months ago, maybe 4 months ago, there were like 15 people in there, most of which I already knew. But I had some really bad experiences in other Discord channels. There were like some racism issues and having to explain to a mod or the owner of the server about my position and how this makes people feel. And then seeing people who usually don't come out and talk have to come out and support what I'm saying because they're also from a marginalized background or something. I had just not a great time. It wasn't even the intention of the people who like owned the Discords or run them or even the mods. Usually very nice people who are like working hard. There's a power dynamic anytime someone goes into a space and has to then defend themselves and you have nothing supporting you other than maybe the words of other people if you're lucky. After a few of those experiences, when I created my own Discord server, I just thought I need to make like the best rules and the most even playing field and so many opportunities for people to speak up and different avenues to do so and a wide array of very intelligent moderators. And so I did, and I got assistance making like our code of conduct, which I'm extremely proud of. And I am always thinking about if we are upholding that. And then I just sat there and people started coming in. A lot of other designers started showing up. John Harper showed up pretty early. I freaked out because at the time, John and I hadn't spoken outside of Twitter. So I was flipping because Mutants was like 3 pages of some ideas. And I wasn't talking to a lot of other designers besides Ali Bustian and Mikey Z, who are people who like really hold me down. But then John started talking, which was way weirder. And then Ashton McAllen showed up and was like, this is a cool space to be. I can't even think of all the people that started showing up in like what order and things now. They're just all here now. It's strange. Games from the Wildwood, Luke just popped up and people started saying, maybe they were talking on Twitter or in DMs or something like, oh, this is like the place to be. And to me, I was like, what? Who told you that? Like, I'm just hanging out over here. But it just happened and people are really respectful of each other. People have each other's backs. We correct each other and teach each other things all the time. There's some community that is being built in my Discord server to where it's not just these people in my Discord. A lot of these people are my friends now. I am so happy to have met and to have the opportunity to talk with these folks. On Tuesdays, we have a community design session for like 2 hours. And with their help, I wrote out an order of operations and rules and guidelines on how to best give everyone an opportunity to get work done and be inclusive of people of all skill levels. And we have a movie night on Thursdays where we just pile into rab.iit room and watch a movie together with the subtitles on so we can laugh and talk to each other. And yeah, it's wonderful. It's my favorite night of the week, honestly. And now Melody at Magical Space Girl, she's running a Shut Up and Design sessions on, I think it's Friday, American time. Saturday morning, her time. And now there's stuff going on that I didn't even organize, which is great. And Melody is bringing in like more people and is probably fantastic at upholding the atmosphere and vibe and rules. And being the first person to be doing something that I'm not guiding is both very, very refreshing. And she's someone that, even if I don't know her super well, I very much trust going about that. So it's just become like this place where things both get done emotionally and like on paper. It's wonderful. I owed so much of my knowledge and time getting mutants done and emotional support. And oh, I just love them. I love all of them.
Wow, now I really want to join your Discord. I don't even understand Discord, but like apparently it's time to figure it out.
Yes. Come join our Discord. We have emotes.
The emotes are in, people. That sounds very exciting. I mean, how do you feel about the future of this fledgling community? I mean, it sounds like it's just growing.
I don't know. There's always the fear that eventually it will get so big that the principles that we uphold now will be lost to a degree, or that, because I've seen this in other Discords where people say that when it was smaller, it was great. There was this and there was that. And then when it gets bigger, eventually there's this point where you just can't keep up. But I just want to, I'm nowhere close to where I want to be as a person. I'm okay with who I am now. Every time I go on that server and I say something, I want to make sure that I am pushing hard to be working towards the code of conduct and the things that people have brought forward, so that every time someone clicks open one of the channels and you see myself and other people doing so, that eventually when people come in and it becomes very large, if that ever happens, that it just stays tight, because I don't want to lose that particular thing, because that's what makes people feel comfortable and at home. And we've never had like someone jump in and say something absolutely ridiculous. And I don't want that day to ever come. And if it does come, I want the response to be, that person is such a ridiculous outlier that we can just laugh at it and move on, because we are all trying to be better than that.
Bumps in the road. I mean, that stuff is, I don't know, I kind of think of it as inevitable, but then some people think that like just the internet being bad is inevitable. We know that's not true, so.
Yeah, the future will hold absolutely wild things.
I want to ask you about your designs. And you said on Twitter once that you just stumbled into being a tabletop game designer. And I'm so interested in that and what makes you think that.
Well, that's quite the story. There was probably a need of a content warning here, being that the story involves mental health, suicidal ideation, general roughed past. But I wasn't a designer, quote unquote, until 8 months ago, about. I'm trying to keep track so that I can celebrate when it gets to a year. Over the last like 4 years or so, I would never think that I would be in this space. I played D&D since I was 14 or 15, something like that. And I had this lovely place that I could go where I could play a bunch of tabletop games and video games and things like that. But that was always just a hobby. And a few years ago, my life track was esports. I was commentating Super Smash Brothers tournaments all over the US, and I got to do Evolution, the greatest fighting game tournament in the world, and all of these really, really big events that I thought that it's what I wanted to do. Things did not go well for me personally when I was doing that. I just didn't enjoy it. I enjoyed it while I was actually doing it, but all the politics, and I had some bad experiences with people trying to kind of keep me in that place and not like expand. And then when I ended up leaving, I was feeling a lot of pressure on myself mentally. I have depression and anxiety. It's something that just always there. I'm working through it, thinking through it. And I have
lovely friends helping me through it. And I quit that. I decided to become a paraprofessional for a year. At this point, the really important bit about that is the person who got me that job and who I spent a lot of time with is the game designer. He's wildly smart. The only thing is that he's not very active on Twitter, or like I don't think he knew what a Powered by the Apocalypse game was until a few months ago when I learned what it was. But he makes like card games and all these great things, and he is one of the smartest people I know. And so I got to work alongside him for a long time, and we became very close. And I played his games, and when I would give feedback or even like learn systems and things, it was a lot easier than I thought it would be. And I just thought to myself, like, oh, I'm kind of smart, haha. But then after a year of being a para, I started to struggle really hard with my anxiety and depression. And I had to end up quitting my summer job. And then a couple months later, I was in the hospital. It was a really tough time because at that point, I had no idea what I was doing with my life. I gave up the opportunity to be an esports personality or that track. I gave that up, and then I couldn't handle being a paraprofessional, although it is extremely gratifying job. It is also the most stressful thing I've ever done. And while I was there, the only thing I thought about was, how do I live my life in a way where I'm doing things that are worth living for? Having that question just changed everything. I didn't have an answer, but I had a good idea, and that was enough. So when I left, I started staying with my best friend, who has been extremely supportive of me and so making sure that like I get healthy and everything. The only thing that I had schedule wise was a game of D&D on Fridays. So I went back to playing, and I don't remember the conversation that came from there, but me and my DM were like, hey, let's make like a shaman class and put it up on DM's Guild. And that's when maybe it's the same demon possessed me. And I was like, here we go. This is what we're doing now. Me and my DM worked very, very hard for the next month or two to complete that. And there were no design principles in my head, or I didn't really understand anything other than I want this to work in a way that's very cool. I want to do this thing that I don't think has been done before, because the idea sounds fun. And so we made this like apothecary future seeing shaman where you make potions and can shoot them at people through blow darts. And it looked so much fun. It was fun to make. It was fun to come up with all these ideas. And as soon as that finished, I started working on another one. And I think I was outpacing my GM, not because they weren't quick enough, but because I just had dived into something. And I wrote 5 sub-races for D&D, and they started to reflect what I want to do as a designer, because I wanted to change all of the problematic issues with representation in like the core fantasy of D&D. And so I was like, I want to make orcs that are, they praise a different god, and they're a matriarchal society, and yeah, they still go and burn stuff down if they want to, but that's because their god tells them that they're unworthy of the land that they use. And it's like this divine retribution that can still have this like conversation over morality there, but just not steeped in like kind of one dimensional issues and non-binary angels. And then did a bunch of research on the different circles of angels and how I think those powers could be reflected in their abilities. And It was fantastic. And then Avery found me, which still to this day, like, sort of strange.
I was wondering how that mentorship came about.
Because I reacted to one of her tweets with a GIF. That is our superhero origin story. She said, specifically, she had tweeted, and we didn't follow each other or anything. Someone had retweeted her, and she said, marijuana is going to be legal, and there are all of these people profiteering from it now, that you need to release all of the people in prison who had been put in there for selling marijuana. And so I replied with the clapping gif of Drake, who's standing up next to the basketball court, because that's when someone goes in that hard, you have to go with the Drake clapping gif. And that sort of action, I was just like, that's wonderful. I get a DM, it's from Avery, and she says, I see in your bio that you work on like D&D stuff, that you're like a new designer. Is there anything that you would like me to like promote or something? I was like, what? No one ever says that kind of stuff. I came from communities that would never do that sort of thing. So it was a little strange. But then I was like, yeah, sure. I have these things on DM's Guild. If you want to retweet those or anything, go ahead. And so she did. And then we had followed each other on Twitter. I still didn't know who Avery was in the scope of tabletop. I just thought there's this cool person that like has a good perspective on life. So eventually Avery put out her mentorship program, and I was not going to apply, because the basis of it was, if like you're working on a game, I want to give you my support and knowledge. And I was not working on a game at the time. This must have been in like November or December, and the word was going out in my small circle. So I just applied, because why not? We had retweeted each other and replied to each other a few times. And I was like, hey, I don't know what I'm doing at all. That was that time period, was me just going, I need information. And I was messaging game designers in all different fields who were friends or acquaintances, being like, hey, can you teach me something? Direct me in a place where I can read something. I was kind of lost. And eventually Avery emailed me and said, hi, you seem very awesome, but you're not working on a game, so I cannot be your mentor exactly. Instead, I will give you a session for an hour, and I will give you a bunch of resources, and you can use those to guide your way. And that was way more than enough for me. I was juiced. I was telling everybody, if I could do backflips, that's when I would have done it. And we had our session. I still have the document, and I've crossed out like a bunch of stuff because I've gone through it. And she said, go read Fate and Dungeon World and Blades in the Dark and listen to these podcast episodes. I think like two of which were yours.
Oh.
And check out these things and these scholarships and these opportunities, and covered so much ground. But even though all of that information was very, very good and has led to many things, the one thing that honestly changed everything was, she said, like, do you have any questions or anything? And there was something like weighing down my heart. And I asked her, like, kind of, what does it take to be a game designer? And I wanted to know if I could do it. And that's a very intimate question to ask. And I was very, very scared to do so. And I probably phrased it a little bit more professionally or something. But Avery has a huge amount of emotional intelligence and sees through me immediately. She's probably a witch. I'm put that on the air for all of the people to know. It's Avery Adler is one of those magical good witches. And she was like, you're already a designer. You did a thing. You researched this. You made something and put it out into the world. You're as much as a designer as I'm a designer. And she didn't say it in a way that was like, oh, this is just to comfort you and make you feel okay. Like, it's what she believes. And my doubt was just like gone and I could move forward. And from there, it was supposed to be just one session, but then we had another one a couple of weeks later. And then she would just DM me things that she thought would be helpful, and I would come with questions. And then one day she DM'd me and she's like, hey, do you want to become a part, official part of the mentor mentee program? Because it's basically what we're doing. I was like, yeah, that would be fantastic. And that's what's happened since. We don't talk super often, but there isn't like a need to. It's like these big check-ins where she'll ask me how I'm doing personally. And usually we'll talk about that a little bit, which is just great because she's a very, very caring person. And then get into like game design stuff. And she helped me refine Mutants like extremely quickly. She was like, she came back from a month of like vacationing and stuff. And was like, hey, I've been gone for a while. And so I want to make sure that like I am being a good mentor and whatever you need help with. And I think like the next day or something, she had come back with some really insightful help that wasn't like, oh, you should change this or change that. She said, I see what you're doing and here are some ways that you can probably strengthen that. And they became some core aspects of like certain mechanics. And she helped me like dive a little bit more into some of the cultural things and took a little bit of tweaking and of course adjusting and whatnot. But the way that she handles all of it is just beautiful. She's one of my favorite people. And hopefully one day, like when people say, oh, I'm going to get like super rich and I'm going to buy my mom a house, after my mom, Avery's getting a house.
That is definitely like the highest honor. I thought that like soon after Mutants in the Dark was finished would be a good time to have you on. But really, some of the biggest reasons I've been wanting to have you on the show is just because of the stuff you say on Twitter. I don't know. I hear stuff from you about the gaming community that I don't hear other people saying. And yet every time it rings true, and you're like, no one else is saying this to me anyway. So I feel that you've really brought to light the way that the tabletop role-playing community is not just white-dominated, but that it's specifically racially segregated. And seeing things that way just made a lot of dynamics make sense in a way that they hadn't made sense before. I mean, you've talked about needing this sort of a green book equivalent to navigate the tabletop community.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes I feel like there's a teacher inside of me. And that teacher version starts speaking and I'm like, all right, do what you got to do.
Let him out.
Yeah. There's this gigantic fear of being canceled that I have, that most marginalized people do. But like, I talk a lot with like other designers of color and I am saying things that have probably closed a lot of doors on me already. But it's okay, because those are doors I didn't want to walk through anyways. It's important to, when you love something, to be able to critique it, because how else is change going to happen? Like, I love Dungeons & Dragons so much. It's been like this huge part of my life. There's still a lot of things that need to be fixed there. I love the tabletop community, and I meet so many wonderful people. Doesn't mean that they still don't have tendencies that are based in racial segregation, even. Or even dynamics that have been set up by people before them or by the games themselves. To not inspect those things is just disingenuous when it's so obvious to me and to a lot of people who just don't speak up, but it's terrifying to speak up. I used to joke with some of my friends that like there are these extremely nice, prominent figureheads in the tabletop community. If one of them was having a bad day or something and retweeted me and said, this is stupid. Just those words. I could be bombarded forever. Boom. Gone. Locked down my Twitter. Stopped talking to people on Discord. Be really sad for a long time.
I'd be afraid to release content because I could get like downvoted into the depths of the sea. Like, it's that easy. But honestly, like, I don't care that much. It's like, I would rather be myself and say the things that I feel like need to be said. And by the way, not all of those things are like just me. Like, I'm speaking for people that I speak with and the feelings that they have, that like, they don't want to go through that. And I completely understand. I have conversations with people, and what people get on Twitter or sometimes in my Discord or wherever, that's a culmination of a lot of people talking and a lot of experiences. And fortunately, people have been receptive, and I've gotten some support from some of those larger, more prominent tabletop people, at least in the form of follows. I don't know. It never feels like enough. And I talk with one of my friends, one of my close designer friends is a Black woman, and we've talked about like these issues before, and I think she's the first person that I said it to, but like, if I ever get famous in tabletop, the only thing that I want to do is to be able to sit down with all of these other famous people in tabletop and figure out how we can stop doing like these specific things. And some things are backed by companies and some things aren't. Some things are positioned where if you say something sort of in a similar fashion, that you could be alienating some of your fan base, or some people don't know what to do or how to approach topics of the games that they play that get into racial stereotypes or like heavy sexism or even trans antagonism, stuff like that, that I'm learning about because of friends and colleagues. But I am provided both a unique opportunity and a potential target on my back, because I can say whatever I need to say. And as long as I do it carefully and with some education behind me and with no intent to hurt anyone, because that's never my intent, things will be okay. And people have shown me that by support and opportunity and all sorts of things. So it's not going to stop, because that's just who I am.
Good. I'm glad. Well, I think that's a really nice note to wrap up on, honestly. If people are interested in you and what you're up to and your projects, where's a good place to send them?
You should head on over to my Twitter. It's at Dungeon Commander with no E in the commander. It's just DR. My pinned tweet has information on my Patreon, Discord community, and a link where you can purchase Mutants in the Night. It's currently on itch.io, which I think is a pretty great website that you should support even if you don't buy my game. That's where you can find me.
Cool. I love it. So you're going to have a show on the One Shot Network. That's coming out really soon. I'm super excited about that.
Yes, and I have been very, very, very tense holding in that secret. I really wanted to talk about it for like the last 2 or 3 weeks or something. Now that I finally get to, I am so glad, and it gets to be on this show. It's called In Theory, and I'm going to be talking about a particular RPG theory, whether that's about a specific game or a type of mechanic or even just community-based ideas and topics, with a guest each week. And I have a lot of topics and guests already lined up for that. I'm very, very interested in diving into all sorts of ideas and making sure that we get a wide range of perspectives on individual topics.
Cool. So what are you most excited about with this project?
My favorite bit about it is having like a rotating guest spot, mostly because I talk to a lot of different people about topics in the tabletop community already, and giving someone a full like hour or so of time to talk about something that they specialize in or that they're very passionate about in conversation is a lot easier for them to dive into that topic headfirst. And being able to guide and both throw in my own perspectives, I think, will be really healthy, especially since it's framed in a conversational way.
because I would hope that people would also kind of become a part of that conversation, both in processing their own thoughts and going out into the tabletop space and asking those questions and bringing up the different elements that we may bring up in the show.
That's really rad. I'm excited to have like a really just theory discussion podcast on the network. I think that's going to be so sweet. Yes. And I mean, I don't know. It's a natural fit. If you've done like announcing and that kind of thing before, then I feel like you're probably going to be pretty comfortable talking to folks, microphone stuff.
Yeah. I've always done performance-based things. I did drama and improv and commentating, and I love talking to people generally. So hopefully that will bring the comfort to both listeners and guests.
Oh, yeah. And you have a show on Twitch as well, right? You've been doing some D&D streaming there.
Currently, I'm not streaming at the moment, but once I am done playtesting with the few groups that I have set up, I am going to be streaming Mutants in the Night campaign, going long form for the first time, doing it live. That'll be on twitch.tv/dungeon commander without the E in the commander.
Oh, that's like some live wire, like tightrope type stuff. That's next level for Twitch stuff. That's very exciting.
Yeah, I like to throw myself in the fire.
Well, thank you so much for joining me. This was a really, really good chat. It was just nice getting to know you.
Yeah. Again, I am extremely honored for being here, since your show was a big part of me getting to where I am now, like mentally and as a designer. And it is good to get to know you as well, because we're going to definitely hang out at Big Bad Con, since we're both.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I'm super excited. Is this your first Big Bad Con?
Yes, it is.
Okay. It is good.
So I'm going to give you a very big high five and possibly a sandwich.
Yes. Definitely. I enjoy being fed.
Sandwiches are good.
For joining us, and as always, thank you for listening. If you have thoughts on today's show, remember you can email me. That's backstorypodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow me on Twitter. That's @backstorycast. And hey, do you like this show? It couldn't really exist without the One Shot Network, and the One Shot Network couldn't exist without its Patreon. If you go to patreon.com/oneshotpodcast, you'll see some ways that you can support the show on an ongoing basis. If it means something to you, you might consider donating. You'll get some very cool secret content, including some poems I read for some reason, a possible upcoming AP GM'd by me, and you'll get the satisfaction of knowing you're supporting some amazing shows. Not just Backstory and One Shot and Campaign, but other awesome shows like Modifier. Modifier is an interview podcast with host Megan Dornbrock that's changing the game when it comes to changing games. Designers of every level are invited to discuss what prompted them to hack a game, the kind of play experience they seek to create, and the types of stories they're hoping to tell. You can find all that and more at oneshotpodcast.com. Music for Backstory is provided by Ujiko. The track is called Thinking of You, and you can hear more at soundcloud.com/UJICO, or by finding them on Spotify, YouTube, or wherever else you get your chill beats. Talk to you later, heroes.